It all starts with an invitation to experience Lexus. To get behind the wheel. To go out on the open road. To feel a rush of adrenaline. It starts as an invitation to drive a Lexus vehicle. But it becomes an exhilarating experience. The invitation to Lexus sales event. Your invitation is always open. But the offers only last through March 31st. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.
If you thought you had to travel far to savor the pad thai of Bangkok, or to taste the pastries of Paris, take another look. With 2x total points at grocery stores, your same kitchen can come with more cuisines. Sapphire Preferred from Chase. Make more of what's yours.
Valid up to $1,000 in purchases per month from November 1st, 2020 to April 30th, 2021. Account subject to credit approval. Cards are issued by JPMorgan Chase Bank, N.A. member FDIC.
Tonight's bonus episode was made possible by the thrilling new podcast, The Shrink Next Door. Welcome to a bonus episode of Monsters Among Us. I am your guide, Derek Hayes. That's right, it's Monday, and it's a fresh episode. Thanks to the folks at Wondery and The Shrink Next Door. But more on that here in a bit. Now tonight's episode is going to be another grab bag episode, so who knows what we're going to uncover here. And in fact, one of these calls simply has a number. I don't even know what the subject matter is. I'm pretty excited about that one. So without further ado, let's launch into our first call of the evening. To kick things off, we head to my home state of Ohio, and the following story comes to us from Jake.
Hi, Derek. This is Jake from Cincinnati, and I live in a lot of other callers in the Ohio River Valley. It's a very densely wooded area comparable to like Appalachia, the Pacific Northwest, you know. And I've never seen anything, you know, too strange or extraordinary in those woods. What I'm calling about has happened in my house. Basically, I live in a cleared out area, but directly behind our house is about 4 miles of plowed fields, you know, cleared trees or very dense woods. It's very hilly. And there were a few cabins back there in those, you know, three, 4 miles back there. And we don't own the property. There's a retired veterinarian named Dr. Fix who owns all that property. And he's owned it for, I don't know, probably 50 years. He's a very old man. And I used to help him out when we first moved here about 10 years ago to, you know, clear paths for ATV trails, to help with the horses and things like that. And he has a woodshed where he works on craft, like almost like a mechanic shop by his house. And he has little pieces of things that he'll find from those cabins, pieces of pottery, pieces of wood beams, pieces of metal. But the most interesting thing is that he's had a few tombstones, and he has them, you know, in that like wood shop, whatever, hanging close to the rafters above a mantle where the tool shed is. And they're too faded to read anything, but just the fact that there were tombstones back there is pretty interesting. And there's some foundations and, you know, of a cabin, and then there's a really deep stone well behind our house. So that's where I think some of the energy of what I'm about to describe comes from. So a little backstory, my dad put up cameras recently because my 16-year-old brother was sneaking out and he was trying to deter that. So we have, you know, probably anywhere from five to seven cameras in our house. So one day, a few days ago, probably like 6-7 days ago, we were looking for a new camera is me, my stepsister, and my younger brother, because, you know, as teenagers in the house, it's always good to know where the cameras are to get around them if need be. And we walk into the garage and we see that there's a camera and that there's a blinking light. So the blinking light is on the cameras. It blinks blue when it detects motion, and it blinks the whole time that it's detecting video. So we walk into the garage and we trip this camera. And we start waving to it. It's an inside joke where, you know, my dad, if he ever sees them, you know, he sees a few of them, you know, whenever he wants to look at them, if they're triggered and he wants to see what was going on, he can look at it and see the video. So we wave to it and say, hi, you know, funny that you caught us, whatever. So this time we walk into the garage and we wave to the camera, all three of us, and we say, hi, you know, wave to it. And I would say not 5 seconds after that, the garage door opens. And no one is near the garage door opener. We were on the other side of the garage. And after the garage door opens, the light, whole lights in the garage, they flicker on and off. Not like a flicker, more like they turned off and on. You could hear the electricity go and then turn on and turn off. So it wasn't like a light bulb flickered. It was exactly like someone deliberately turned the lights on and off a few times. And then this weird like alarm noise played. We couldn't tell where it was coming from, but It sounded like there's some sort of loud beeping noise that we haven't heard before and we haven't heard since. So we brushed it off at the time. We started laughing because we thought, oh, you know, that's Dad acknowledging that he can see us on the cameras. But then after that, and we went inside, I kind of realized it, that my dad had been in Jamaica the past week, and we had just gotten a text from him about 2 hours before that he was in Baltimore to catch his flight back home. And I kind of realized that he was in the air when that happened. And it's, you know, maybe a 3 hour flight, 2-3 hours from Baltimore. And my father is a pretty frugal man. There's no chance that he would have bought the Wi-Fi or the internet on the plane or whatever. And to see that, when we went back inside after that, closed the garage door after it had been opened, I started wondering, you know, how did he do that? That's pretty interesting. And so he gets home, him and my stepmother, and we all go down, all the kids, there's, you know, four kids in the house, and we go down and we talk to them. They give us gifts from Jamaica or whatever. And I asked my dad, I said, hey, how did you do that garage door thing? And he said, what are you talking about? You know, he didn't know. And my stepsister and my brother and I, you know, we started to get a little paranoid, and we kept questioning him. And I'm pretty good friends with my dad. I leave open the possibility, obviously, that it could have been him just messing with us, but he said that he didn't have internet the whole time in any of the flights, and he showed us, like, he went in the garage and showed us that our garage door opener is a much older model than anything else in the house, because it's, you know, it never broke or anything. We never needed to replace it. So there's zero chance in my mind, and you know, supposedly in his, that he could have opened the garage door or seen the video feed from us while he was in the air. So we, you know, obviously it could be someone messing with us. It could be him messing with us. It could be anything. I mean, I know it's not airtight or anything, but it really spooked us all out when he showed us that there's, you know, he wasn't able to do it. And the other thing that I have, I'll be sending it in an email, and I know it's obviously an audio podcast, you can't tell, but any teenager or, you know, younger person will tell you that Snapchat is very, very popular. One time about a year ago, I was in my hallway between my bedroom and the bathroom, and I took a picture for Snapchat, whatever, throwaway random picture of the hallway. Our hallway, to give it some context, it's my brother's room, my room, the bathroom, my sister's room, and then across, like a bridge, to my brother's room on the other side of the house. So there's probably about 7 feet of just a 10-foot drop on either side. And I took a picture, and in the picture you see me, but I scratched my face out so you could focus on the picture, and you can see me and very obviously what appears to be the face of a ghost. I mean, I'll send it in to you. You can describe it to your listeners, say what you think about it. But it really spooked me out at the time. I don't know. I want to have your opinions on that. I know none of this is watertight. Had a few other weird things happen to me, but this is just my story, and I thought I'd submit it to the podcast. Love your show, Derek. Probably one of my favorite podcasts out right now, and we really appreciate what you're doing. So thanks. Hope to see this on air. Bye.
Thanks, Jake. There's a lot to unpack here. Let me start off by saying that some electrical devices can be altered by power outages. So I'm wondering if perhaps the garage door has some sort of safety mechanism that prompts the unit to close the door in the case of a power failure. And the way the lights were behaving, that sounds like exactly what was going on. In addition, the mention of the tombstones also brought up a story that I recall from my childhood. We used to poke around a bit on our neighbor's farmland, and on the top of one of his particular hills was a pile of sun-bleached white marble. We played with this pile a bit and, you know, messed around with it, and I swear you could see some lettering carved into it. But, you know, as a kid, nobody believes you, and I started to question it myself. And that's when I overheard a conversation between my dad and my neighbor, mentioning that people were actually buried there, and that was the tombstone that somehow had been shattered over the years and just kind of collected at the base of a tree at the top of this hill. And I remember being equally terrified and fascinated by the idea that some random people could be buried a mere 200 yards from my bedroom window. It just always seemed strange to me. And somehow Jake's story about the tombstone in the gentleman's workshop brought those memories flooding back. Now, of course, I cannot progress further without mentioning the photo that Jake referenced. Now, if you would like to look at this photo, simply go to the show notes at monstersamonguspodcast.com and click on the show notes tab. In addition, I'm sure that Addie will have it posted all over Facebook, and I'll make sure it's on Twitter and Instagram as well. Now, in the particular photo, it pretty much looks exactly as Jake described. On the left-hand side, you can see something that appears to look like a face. I don't claim to be any sort of photo expert, so I can't say definitively if this is a genuine photo or some sort of trick of the light. But I can agree that I do see some sort of face. So why don't you have a look and see what you guys think. Thank you again, Jake, for taking the time to share your call. And as they say down your way, hooday. Our next story of the evening is that of the squatchy variety. The following comes to us from Jesse in the state of Texas.
Hey, Derek. This is Jesse in Southeast Texas, and I know you love Bigfoot stories, so I thought I would sit in. I just started listening to the show a few weeks ago. I started from the most recent, and I know you're still looking for Bigfoot stories, so here I go. I'm 20 now. This happened when I was around 12. I grew up in the Southeast Texas area. It's very heavily wooded. Like, the nearest town was like 40 minutes away. My house was surrounded by pasture on one side that had been cleared out, and then the rest was just all full of trees for miles. So we had a pool in the backyard, and every day after school, I would go and swim until dinner time once the weather got warm enough. From the pool, I could see out into the pasture. I would be swimming and I would look up, and it was very normal for me to see my dad walking from the house out to the feed room in the pasture. So at first, when I saw this, that's what I thought I was seeing, was my dad walking out to the feed room. But after a few seconds, I realized that it wasn't coming from the house. It was coming from the other direction, cutting from the trees across the pasture towards the feed room, towards the trees on the other side. Like I said, I was very familiar with the sight of my dad out there, and I knew that whatever this was significantly larger than my dad, who is almost 6 feet tall and solidly built. If I had to guess, I would say this thing was closer to 7 feet, and I could tell it was all one color, like a darkish brown. I will admit, I have very, very, very bad eyesight, but it has gotten a lot worse with age, and at that time, my eyesight was not near as terrible as it is now. It was starting to go, but not so bad that I couldn't tell that, one, what I was seeing was not my dad, and two, I had a very good sense. I could still see very clearly the size and the color. Those aren't really things that are corrupted by bad eyesight, you know? I went inside and told my mom about it, and it was, like, close to dinner anyway. I think she kind of brushed me off, but later she showed me a newspaper article from a nearby town. We didn't live anywhere close enough to actually have a newspaper, but a newspaper from a nearby town had reported that a local had seen Bigfoot in our area on the same day that I had had my sighting. So that's enough for me to be relatively confident that what I saw was Bigfoot. But, you know, I'm sure, I guess maybe it could have been someone trespassing, although that doesn't seem very likely to me because, like I said, I had a pretty good idea of the size and the color. And, I mean, it was hot out. It was like, it was late May in Texas, so it was already very hot. So if it was like someone in a ghillie suit, trespassing on our land is really the only explanation I can think of. But even then, it would have had to be a pretty large person. Thanks for your time. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Jesse. Now, the fact that Jesse was in the water raises a question for me. Quite a few close-up Bigfoot encounters occur while the witness is on horseback. Now, it's claimed that the horse masks the human scent and, obviously, changes the foot traffic sounds. So, in short, Sasquatch could be much less apprehensive about an approaching horse than it would be a human being alone. Now, I wonder if Jesse, being in the water, acted in a similar fashion. Now, I imagine human scent and movement would be much more difficult to detect in this particular situation. And now the fact that there is a newspaper article essentially backing up Jesse's claims also lends a lot of credence to this sighting. And perhaps this tidbit will also help support Jesse's claim. The area of East Texas is quickly becoming a recognized Bigfoot hotspot. I've seen a majority of the sightings originate from a place called the Big Thicket National Preserve, 30-some miles from the Louisiana border. So obviously, there seems to be something in the Texas woods. Thanks again, Jesse, for taking the time to share that one. It really got me thinking. So staying in the state of Texas, our next call was submitted by Mary.
Hi, Derek. This is Mary from South Texas. I've called before with two additional stories about my summer of 97. I was calling back. I met with my sisters and actually spoke to two aunts about that summer. Fortunately, my parents didn't want to speak about it. After speaking with them, I'm very confident in two of the incidents that occurred later that summer. It seems it was very consistent between all of us of what we remembered. I had mentioned before that an uncle, the year passed, which was in 96, had passed away. He was actually murdered not too far away from where we live. My mother was going through a spot of depression that summer as well, due to his death and some issues going on at work. One day we were, it was later off in the summer, we were getting ready for a big barbecue at my grandmother's house, who lived in the lot next to us. She had two additional homes than her home, and the yards all connected, and we had a fence dividing us, and you could see straight across. So my uncles and their wives and stuff were in the backyard, and we were in our home, and we were inside cooking. We were, you know, potato salad, all that kind of stuff, and we heard a ruckus outside, which was my aunt yelling. Didn't know really what was going on until she was at our back door, and she was screaming, you know, he's inside. So she ends up coming in, and she's bawling and runs through the house. She's looking around, and we have no idea what's going on. So my mom ends up getting a hold of her and sitting her down and asking her what's going on, and she said that she was sitting in my grandma's yard, and that she had seen something white that caught her eye. She looked over, and it was my uncle was standing at the bottom steps. It looked like he was getting ready to walk into the house. My uncle always wore these blue Dickie pants or Dickie shorts and a white tee with Converse. That's his outfit ever since I could remember, ever since anybody could remember, that's what he wore. And she ran across the yard going into our yard. By the time she got there, she thought he walked into the house. So that's when she came in. A few weeks later, my mom ended up seeing him at the back door again, looking in. He was talking to her, but she couldn't hear what he was saying. She was sitting in a chair in her bedroom, which was at the end of the hall. And by the time she actually got up to walk towards the back of the door, he was gone. So the last incident that happened was throughout the summer, my mom was having night terrors, and they were getting worse, progressively worse. She works in a hospital. She's a phlebotomist. She knows lots of doctors and stuff. She spoke with them about it, and, you know, she thought it was maybe her medication. It was, you know, all of this was due to that. At its peak, and the way I know about it is that it woke the entire house up. The way they explained it to me, after speaking to my aunts, because my mom never spoke to us about this, is that she was asleep, and in her dream, my uncle was there, and he was speaking to her, and he kept telling her to wake up. She said that she kept interrupting him because she had tons of questions for him, and just kept interrupting her, telling her, wake up, wake up, wake up. In this dream, something dark came along. She said the entire room kind of just went into darkness. My uncle faded away, and this darkness came to the edge of the bed. It ended up straddling over her, and she felt the pressure on her chest. During this, in her dream, my father ended up waking up because he felt impressions on the bed, so he felt her getting up, and it was in the 90s, so it was the old spring beds where you could feel everything, so he felt her moving. It was quite a bit, so he assumed she was getting up. He looked over, she was almost gasping for air. He started to shake her to wake her up. At that point, she just started screaming, and this woke up the entire house. We ended up going into the room, and I remember this. We ended up going into the room, and she was screaming, and my dad was trying to lift her up, but he couldn't get a good grasp on her, and he was still shaking her onto the bed. It took him a good 5 minutes to actually lift her up. He couldn't get a grasp on her to pick her up. She seemed heavy. He looked baffled. We were all just completely baffled of what was happening. He ended up waking her up, and she was just completely she was gone. She was crying. She was not able to speak very well. She was speaking very rapidly, and then she would just stop, and her chest was red. It was so red, and it could have been from the screaming, I mean, just, you know, the whole event. And she ended up realizing that we were standing there, and she composed herself, and this is just my mom, that she, you know, immediately thought of us, and, you know, she calmed us down. At that point, we were all kind of crying, and, you know, she got us back and put us into our beds and, you know, just ensured us that everything was going to be okay, that she was fine, that, you know, her and my dad were fine, just the type of woman she is, you know, that everything was okay. Soon after that, her and my dad left us with my grandmother, and they went to the valley to see some family. One of my aunts from Mexico ended up coming back with her, and this aunt was very spiritual. We were all Roman Catholic, and, you know, we grew up in the church, and we are still tied to our church. But my aunt always had candles and all this other kind of stuff. Later, we ended up finding out that she's a curandera, which is almost like a white witch. She came back with my parents, and for 2 days, we continued to stay with my grandma for these additional 2 days. They ended up doing a cleaning on my mother and doing a cleaning on the house. Supposedly, somebody had put some bad juju on us, on the household. They were drawing spirits and other things to the house to attack my mother. At that point, my mom kind of threw herself into church, ended up going to church retreats and stuff like that. But we ended up going into the house, and it smelled different for like 2 weeks. They would send us to my grandmother's house. They would do whatever in the house, pray over it, holy water, all that kind of stuff. We would come back, and now I know what I was smelling. It was sage. It was sage in the house, and they gave us all St. Michael's pendants for us to wear. After that, we never felt anything in that house again. My mom was so much better after that. I don't know if it was like a mental thing, but I ended up having to call my aunt that lives in the valley here in Texas now about what was going on, and she just told me that there was just something bad that was sent upon us because of envy. And how envy is such a very hard and powerful thing that people don't really realize it. It could be something small that somebody has envious towards you. And if they have some sort of knowledge of that other world, then they can bring that stuff to you. That's my story from 97. There was some additional things that happened, but speaking with my sisters, it kind of seemed we all kind of differated on things. So this particular incident, these two incidents were very similar. Everybody agreed on everything. Everybody remembered it that way. Thank you so much for everything you do. I'm on season 3 now, and I'm going through them like crazy at work. So thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Mary. That's quite a story. There's a lot to unpack there as well. It almost sounds like The Conjuring or some sort of film in that genre. Like a family drama, if you will. You know, speaking of family drama, a lot of families have like a ghost story. Like, oh, my uncle's cousin's friend was haunted by this or that. And I remember our family's haunted story. I'm pretty sure I mentioned this on probably more than one episode, but hey, it's a grab bag episode, so let's do it again. My aunt lost her husband, this was the late 70s, right before I was born, I believe, and according to her, or at least according to the stories I've heard, she was plagued by his spirit for months afterward. He in fact chased her from Utah to Ohio. He would do things like rattle pots and pans and move things around in the house, and eventually it seemed to have gone away. But what sticks out to me the most is the way that my parents talked about it. It was so matter-of-fact. And I'd always been told that, you know, ghosts aren't real, they're make-believe. But to hear my mother and father discuss it in such certainty, it definitely shaped the way I thought about it going forward. So Mary, your story reminded me of that. It seems each were terrifying, but in the end, seemed to just fizzle away. Thanks again for taking the time to share your story. Looking forward to diving into your other submissions. Now before we move on to the last few calls of the evening, we need to talk about tonight's sponsor. Psychiatrists see us in our most vulnerable moments. All of our problems and dysfunctions laid bare to a stranger. We hope that they keep our secrets and help us solve our problems. We place our inherent trust in them. But what if they use that knowledge against us for their own benefit? In a brand new podcast from Wondery and Bloomberg, The Shrink Next Door host Joe Nocera takes you deep into what it looks like when a psychiatrist becomes something much more. You'll hear of extravagant parties attended by movie stars, a lavish home in the Hamptons, and a man at the center of it all. You're about to hear a preview of The Shrink Next Door, in which you'll meet host Joe Nocera and hear about a relationship that will go on to affect two people's lives for 29 years. While you're listening, go subscribe to The Shrink Next Door on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening now. There's also a link in tonight's show notes that will take you there. So without further hesitation, a clip from The Shrink Next Door.
By any measure, Marty Markowitz was a success. He had an Ivy League diploma, a law degree, his own business, and plenty of money. But when he hit 38, he found himself feeling seriously overwhelmed. His rabbi recommended a therapist he knew, who had an office on Manhattan's East Side.
I go into his office, which was, you know, a modestly furnished office with a desk and a chair and a couch.
The therapist's name was Dr. Isaac Hirschkopf, but he told Marty to call him Ike. He was a young, handsome man with a round face, a close-cropped beard, and curly black hair. He was dressed casually in an open-collar shirt and shorts.
I sat down right across from him, and we looked at each other, and he said, okay, why are you here?
Marty had seen a therapist before, the kind who would listen while you lay down on the couch and talk about your dreams. This therapist was different.
His modus operandi was basically, I'm your pal, tell me what's bothering you, and let's take it from there.
Marty spent the whole session laying out his problems. He told Ike how his father and mother had recently died, how he'd inherited the family business, how he was having a hard time dealing with his new responsibilities. When he'd finished, Marty says Ike looked at him and said,
I'm going to take you on as a patient. And I said, okay, nice.
Not only was Ike taking him on as a patient, but he made Marty a promise.
He said, don't worry, I'll take care of everything. I was overwhelmed. And to have someone say to me, don't worry, calm down, this is nothing to get upset about, we're going to straighten everything out, and we're going to do it fast. Very comforting to me.
Marty wrote him a check.
I think it was for $160, something like that, back in the day.
It was June 1981. Marty had come to Ike because he needed help. But if he had known what his new therapist had in store for him, he probably would have walked out the door and never come back. From Wondery and Bloomberg, I'm Joe Nocera, a columnist with Bloomberg Opinion, and this is The Shrink Next Door. I put a spell on you. This is episode one. Welcome to the neighborhood. Every neighborhood has its share of mysteries. We can live our entire lives and barely know the people just one door down. I have a summer house in Southampton, a couple of hours outside of New York. This part of the Hamptons is called the Bayside. It's quiet, peaceful, a place to escape from the city in the hot summer months. Samson and Jackie Guillot have a house on the same street as me.
My name is Jacqueline Guillot, and we're married 35 years?
We're married 52 years.
They've been coming here since the 80s. Most of the houses on our street are single-story with wooden clapboard fronts. Samson and Jackie's house is no different.
It's a lovely home, really.
But there's one house on the street that stands out. For starters, it's just bigger than most of the other houses. It's two stories instead of one, and it's the only one on the street with a separate guest house out back. And then there's the way it looks.
The house is spectacular, with windows and windows and windows.
Everything about it is over the top.
There's a pond with goldfish, lots of fish, and a waterfall to the pond, too.
It's bigger, bolder, brasher than anything else on the street. In 2010, my wife Dawn and I bought the house next door. It wasn't long before a man popped over to our house to introduce himself. He was dressed like a maintenance man, green khaki pants, a long-sleeved work shirt, and a faded baseball cap. He welcomed us to the neighborhood, and then he handed us a folder of press clippings.
I literally just took them and said thank you, but he wanted us to have them. You know, he really wanted Joe to have them.
There were articles that a psychiatrist, Dr. Isaac Hirschkopf, had written, and articles that had been written about him. In mid-August, an invitation arrived to a summer barbecue next door, hosted by Dr. Hirschkopf, Ike. This would be the last of three big summer parties he threw every year. I went alone. To reach the front door, I had to cross a bridge over a fish pond. There were maybe 40 or so guests hanging out in the backyard. I roamed about, stopping here and there to chat. I spotted the actor Richard Kind, just in time to see him do a belly flop into the pool. There were a handful of other people, too, people I recognized as prominent New Yorkers, like Dr. Ruth, the TV personality and sex expert. It was a warm afternoon. I chatted with a few people, sipped on my glass of wine, and began to wander around. At some point, I found myself in the living room. There was a fake giraffe bust, Venetian masks, plastic parrots hanging from the ceiling, even a giant gong. But what struck me most were the photographs. Lots and lots of photographs. And in nearly every one of them, there was Ike Hirschkopf with a different celebrity. Ike with Henry Kissinger. Ike with Elie Wiesel. Ike with Brooke Shields. Ike with Gwyneth Paltrow. Even Ike with O.J. Simpson. It was like one of those diners where the walls are covered with pictures of celebrity patrons. At that moment, the man himself appeared. He greeted me like a long-lost friend and said that my wife and I should come over soon for a drink. And then he was gone. Sure enough, a few days after the summer party, the same maintenance man we'd met before showed up at our door again. This time, he brought an invitation for drinks. It was very formal, as if he was reading from a script.
You mean like Dr. Hirschkopf would want you to come over?
Right.
At such and such a time, on such and such a day.
The formality of it blew me away, and he was very, very exacting about how it had to go.
So we went.
One of the strangest evenings I've ever had in the Hamptons.
Or anywhere else, for that matter.
But definitely the Hamptons.
It was pouring rain. We headed over, umbrellas in hand. To get to the front door, we crossed a bridge. We could see koi circling in the water below. Ike and his wife, Becky, welcomed us in and ushered us to a round kitchen table. There were snacks laid out, carrots and celery. Ike served white wine.
So what I remember is him talking incessantly about being a sex therapist and a celebrity therapist.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember the details, but that just really sticks in my mind that he kept going on and on about that. It was more like a monologue than a dialogue. That's what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember?
I just remember thinking these people are... I felt suffocated.
Ike talked about his work.
I've never seen anything like it. But I remember thinking he was very brazen about the details of his life, considering we were strangers and also considering what he does. He did talk about an NBA sports guys and somebody, a Yankees player. I just thought he lacked a lot of discretion, given his field.
We listened politely as he went on and on.
I just remember looking towards the door.
Finally, after about an hour, I said we needed to get home.
And we got up to leave, and it was very clear that Ike wanted a photograph.
A photograph of me.
I think he came out and said, well, we'd like to get a picture of you. And it was just Joe. It wasn't Joe and I.
So I let Ike take my picture, pin it to his wall, and then we left. As fast as we could.
I remember getting to our home, collapsing on the couch or something.
Dawn told me she never wanted to go back. There was no sign of the maintenance man the night Dawn and I went over. But I knew he was still around. Sometimes we'd be on our deck and we'd see him outside working in the yard. When I returned to the Hamptons the following summer, I noticed something strange at the house next door. I would see the maintenance man out on the property doing his usual work in the backyard. But Ike Hirschkopf was gone. I would never see him or his wife Becky in the Hamptons again. There were no more summer parties. It was as if they had simply disappeared. And that's when I learned that everything I had thought I'd known about my neighbor was wrong.
It's a wild story.
That's the maintenance man. The guy who came to our door with the press clippings. The guy we saw working around the yard. That was Marty Markowitz. The same guy who had first gone to see Dr. Isaac Hirschkopf as a patient nearly 30 years earlier. That was just a preview of The Shrink Next Door. To listen to the rest, subscribe to The Shrink Next Door on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
And I can tell you this, Sarah has already checked out the first couple episodes of The Shrink Next Door, and she approves. And I don't have to tell you what it means to Monsters Among Us for you to support our sponsors. So if it sounds like something that you're interested in, head on over, give it a click. All right, let's get back to the spooky action. Our next call of the evening comes to us from Nick from Parts Unknown.
Hey, Derek. My name is Nick. I've been listening to the show for a couple of months now, and I thought it was high time that I submitted one of my stories. As wild as it may sound, I actually grew up in a series of haunted houses all across Alabama and Georgia. Or it might be more accurate to say that I've met something weird in every place that I've lived. Actually, my latest encounter with something weird was actually prompted by your show. I was listening to Monsters Among Us late at night, so of course I'm spooked as I'm getting ready for bed. Shut down the lights, plugged in my phone, settle in for the night, and it became pretty clear that this was going to be the kind of night where you sleep with the lights on. But I'm pretty stubborn. The lights stayed off. I turned my back to the dark, like creepy, like malevolent feeling room. And after a few minutes of trying to wait out the creepy feelings, I realized that I was just laying there, staring at the ceiling, my ears just straining to hear anything weird. And so I just kind of like, I felt kind of like an idiot. I rolled over onto my side. But, I mean, the room still felt super, super creepy. And so I just kind of rolled over, resigned myself to getting maybe 1 or 2 hours of sleep that night. And words appeared in my head. Like, I didn't hear a voice in my ears. Like, I didn't hear it. And the words in my head didn't sound like my thoughts do. They generally sound like my voice, but it's just like a phrase just dropped into my head. The words, "they can't hurt you," just fell into my brain and just like seemed to click into place. And as they did, that creepy feeling just dropped away. It didn't go away completely. It didn't just vanish, but it seemed to recede, like he was being held back. So I just laid there for a minute, kind of dumbfounded, and decided the best course of action was to be polite. So I said thank you out loud, and I closed my eyes again, and I fell asleep almost immediately. The really weird part is when I told my dad, who also listens to your show, about this, I could just about see his hair raise up on end, even though he's bald. And he told me that another caller had a nearly identical experience. I think he said back in season 2? I'm not really sure on that one, but I have a bad habit of listening to podcasts backwards. I start at the latest episode and listen back towards episode 1. So I still haven't listened to it. I'm pretty excited about finding that episode. The reason I mention that is this. Because of my fairly chaotic listening habits, I'll listen backwards or jump around or whatever. I couldn't have heard the episode he's talking about, and like I couldn't have heard it and misremembered it happening to me, or like had my brain drop in a similar message after hearing the phrase, or I don't really know what it was. I mean, it could have been a friendly something dropping by to give me some encouragement, or maybe it was just my subconscious, like, sick of not being able to sleep. I'm a skeptic for the most part, mostly for my sanity, but I definitely like the thought of someone watching out for me. But yeah, love the show. I haven't really come across a format quite like this. I really like it. Yeah. This has been Nick from Georgia. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Nick. It certainly seems like sometimes it's the person that's haunted rather than the other way around. Now, the way Nick describes the strange voice that he heard in his head, it's surprisingly similar to what I experienced while working on this new studio. If you recall back to earlier this season, I discussed a few weird occurrences where a strange voice or message would pop into my head, giving me tips and correcting mistakes I was making in my construction. And the weird thing is, I was left just as puzzled as Nick is, wondering who this was, and better yet, where they were. Thanks again, Nick, for taking the time to share that creepy call. Now, our next story of the evening may be another first for the show. I can't recall touching on this topic at any point. At any rate, the following story comes to us from an unknown source in the state of Michigan.
Hi, Derek. I'm a big fan of your podcast. I'm fairly new, so I've been skipping around. I love listening to it when I'm driving to work or getting ready in the morning. So I have a story for you. It took place about 2 years ago in Holly, Michigan, which is about an hour northeast of Detroit, I'd say. So it was about 12:30 at night. Let me start off by saying my dad has like a farmhouse, 12 acres of property, pretty old house from 1873, I want to say. So I'm pretty sure that's got a lot of history. That's, I got some stories about the house for another time. A couple years ago, I was about 18 or 19, I want to say it was summer, fairly humid. I went outside into the garage, and the garage has a door that leads to the backyard. I went outside to have a cigarette. It was, I just remember it being thundering, like storming, horribly, horribly raining hard. The lightning would flash, I could see all the way down to the tree line, 8 acres away, I could see all the way down. There's a pond back there too. But there's this tree about 50 feet from the doorway. I had the doorway open, just standing there, watching the rain, watching the thunder. There's this tree, and it was a creepy little tree, but my dog always likes to go over there and sit and whine and stare up into the tree. I don't know if there's squirrels up there or what, but that always kind of freaked me out. But anyway, so I started noticing these little lights dancing around the tree. And then I'm thinking, you know, first thing that goes across your head is some lightning bugs. But then, and I'm like, wait, no, it is storming. It is raining hard. It is coming down. And the lightning would flash like, it was just like a scary movie. It would flash every like 30 seconds, like 5 seconds of light, bright, bright light. And these lights, they couldn't have been bugs. There was probably like hundreds of them. All I could think about was like fairies. I mean, I don't know, fairies. Do I believe in them? I guess I can't discount them. I'd like to believe in anything, really. Anyway, let me describe these lights for you. There's hundreds of them. Some were flying around, zipping back and forth. Some were standing still. They were probably, like, from where I was 50 feet away, they looked to be the size of, like, a quarter. And they weren't your yellow kind of lightning bug. I don't know if lightning bugs can even fly around in the rain, but they were like bright LED lights, like the kind of bluish white tint. So they're flying around, they're zipping around. That's all I could see was this light, this little circles of light that they were. I couldn't see any body on them or anything. And I didn't go out there to look. I was just watching them like in a daze. What is that? And then I started getting freaked out. Like, am I going to see a form next time the lightning flashes? Am I going to see all the scary movies? I'm a big scary movie fan, so I just, my imagination runs away with me, seeing that lightning flash and seeing a Grim Reaper or something. So I started getting a little freaked out. So I went back inside, and then I was just wondering, like, what the heck did I see? It couldn't have been bugs. I mean, I don't know any bugs that can fly around and in a storm. I've never seen them since. I look around sometimes. I don't know if the weather was perfect for these little beings to, you know, show themselves. If there was, I don't know if there's like electricity in the air. It just didn't seem like electricity that could sizzle in the air. I don't even know how to explain it. Everybody was in bed. I couldn't go get anybody. But yeah, I always wish to see it again. Sadly, we are selling the house this year, so I may never get a chance, but still like to think that those were fairies that I saw. Yeah, I'll probably call in with some other stories that I had, not about fairies, but about other ghosts in the house. Thanks for doing what you do. It's very entertaining. Keep up the good work. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, caller. Now, I gotta say, it sounds like it's the wrong color for fireflies or lightning bugs in the first place. But it actually does sound like the right color for lightning. It makes me wonder if this could be some sort of variant of ball lightning. I know that's only a recently proven phenomenon, so we don't know a whole lot about it just yet. Now, outside of that, I know there are many cultures around the world that believe in and worship fairies, fey folk, nature spirits, elves, sprites, whatever you want to call them. In fact, I remember reading a story recently about the Icelandic government rerouting an entire highway, not to disturb a pile of rocks they believed that elves lived in. So some of these cultures take this legend, if you will, quite seriously. So where there's smoke, there's sometimes fire. And in this case, where there's lights, there could be fairies. Thank you again, caller, for submitting what I think is a first-time fairy call. Now, for the final call of the evening, I have no idea what this call is about. I'm going to find out, just as you guys do. So without further ado, here is that call.
Hello, Derek. This is Ralph, Park Ranger. I emailed you about when I was in the hospital after the heart attack, listening to your podcast through the evenings to keep me company in the sleepless nights that the hospital provides. Thank you for mentioning me the other night. That was an unexpected surprise. So my stories are, basically we have old homes that we take care of on the park property. We get there in the morning, very, very early, still dark, about 6 a.m. You walk in, open up. I proceed to the other side because in this particular home, there's a bathroom. We have to open up and then walk back. As you walk back, I go to close the door behind me. The door has, it's rather heavy, but if it gets momentum, it gives a pretty good slam. So that's what happened. The door slammed rather hard. I continued to walk out. As I proceeded through the room and into the office area to exit, I hear a very loud crash, which really made me jump. And I got to be honest, I was a little afraid to even go back in and see what it was. So I stuck my head in, didn't see anything, and I was on my way. I went back and got my coworker who had arrived, and we went back trying to see what happened. We went to, there's another room off the one main room, and there's a pile of books on the floor that looked like they fell off the shelf, but they weren't strewn about. They were just in a stack, almost like someone got angry and slammed them on the ground. We, of course, took it that the deceased owners of the home was bequeathed to us, were angry that I slammed the door and maybe disrespected their property. You know, you come up with all kinds of explanations. So I picked them up and apologized, and that was that. But the I thought maybe the slam or the walking across the room might have jostled it, but it's a pretty big room. It's a good 30 feet across, and I walked rather slowly, and it was a good 10, 15 seconds before I got through there, so I don't know if that could have been it. The other one is in the same area. There's a horse pen down below, and me and another one of my rangers were assigned to fix the fence. They have the split rail fence, the old wooden ones that slide into each other. We were to replace the ones that were broken. So as we approached it, one right in front of us was bowed, not broken, and still in place. So my partner in work told me, we're not going to address that one right now because it's not broken. So we proceeded along, same thing, good 50 yards away we walked at a leisurely pace. It wasn't a windy day. And then we hear a kind of a kerplunk sound. We look over, and that particular rail had fallen out. And we looked at each other, and she looks at me, say, I guess we better fix that one. And I agreed. So maybe we angered Mrs. Huber even further by disrespecting her horse pen, because she was apparently a fan of horses and things like that. So we immediately, of course, fixed that one first and put it back in the right situation. Anyway, it's an old, creepy place, and there's a few things that have happened that are pretty interesting. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed that. I enjoy your podcast, as I said, and thanks again for helping me get through those awful sleepless nights at the hospital. And please continue. It's a great podcast, and I recommend it to whoever I can. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Ralph. And it's great to hear you're doing better. While you were describing your experience, I couldn't help but imagine a handful of small cottages that I remember seeing at Cuyahoga National Park last time I was in Ohio. There was something about these little buildings. They looked benign, but it's obvious that they were there well before the park was. Now, the thing that really got me thinking is this area is known as Boston Mills. Apparently it was a community before it was turned into the park. But now it seems the town has a new nickname, a sinister nickname, one that I know I've mentioned on the show before. Good old Helltown, Ohio. At any rate, again, I hope you're feeling better, Ralph, and thank you again for submitting that story. And that's going to do it for this bonus episode of Monsters Among Us. I'd like to thank Wondery, Bloomberg, and The Shrink Next Door again for sponsoring this bonus content. Monsters Among Us is written and produced by me, Derek Hayes. Additional support is provided by Tony Bell, Warren Ponabbott, and Addie Lloyd. Music for this episode was provided by Coag Music. Thank you all for listening, and until next week. you stuck around to the end of the show. I need to make a correction to last week's episode. It seemed I jumped the gun on my pterodactyl story. I'd completely forgotten about a submission we received earlier on. You see, last week I played a pterodactyl call from the state of South Carolina, and the actual encounter took place in New York. But I was doing some research yesterday for a future show, and I stumbled upon a past pterodactyl submission that I'd completely forgotten about. So, to give it justice, I'm going to retell the story again. This story originally aired on episode 18 of season 5, and comes out of the state of Texas. This story happened to my mother. She was living in San Antonio, Texas in 1978. One day, my mother went on a little road trip with her sister-in-law and girlfriends, headed toward Nixon, Texas. They spent a day there, and before sunset, they started to make their way home. They were driving on backcountry roads, listening to music, and having a good time in their Volkswagen convertible Beetle. And then, they saw it. They didn't hear anything because of the radio playing, but they watched it just fly by them, and then just disappeared somewhere into the skyline. I have asked my mom many times what she thinks she saw that day, even going through bird books trying to find out. But my mom and her sister swear to this day that it looked exactly like a pterodactyl from their point of view. So my apologies to this submitter, I completely blanked on the fact that we'd already discussed a pterodactyl call. But I gotta say, the two stories sound a lot alike. Thank you to that submitter, and thank you for sticking around to the end of the program. Have a great night.
It all starts with an invitation to experience Lexus. To get behind the wheel. To go out on the open road. To feel a rush of adrenaline. It starts as an invitation to drive a Lexus vehicle. But it becomes an exhilarating experience. The Invitation to Lexus sales event. Your invitation is always open. But the offers only last through March 31st. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.